I've seen this movie before, that one ends in tears. I can tell you exactly what happened.
It's early days.
They don't get it and they don't seem to care.
I'm sorry to the Australian people, but this has happened again.
A government that is bitterly divided.
We've got to raise the standards of journalism a little bit here.
We're here to raise those standards. Hello and welcome to The Party Room. I'm Patricia Carvelis from RN Drive.
And I'm Sabra Lane from AM.
Sabra, welcome to the party. You've been a guest, of course, many times, and now you are my co-host, which is pretty exciting.
It's such an honour. I've got my party shoes on, PK, and it's been a huge week and we've got a lot to get through.
We do. So you've got to say this has been a fortnight of drama in Canberra. This is not the first time I have made that statement, but this particular week has been, I think, quite personal. Before we get into some of the issues on the government side, and whoa, there've been a couple, in fact, three in particular we'll get to. There's been another side drama, which of course affects the government as well, because it all happens in the Senate. One Nation leader, Pauline Hanson, was on Sky on Thursday night. She's had a senator leave her party or at least split from her. It's all been very dramatic, Brian Burston. And you'd have to say she's feeling very much under pressure.
It means so much to me what I'm trying to do. And for him to turn around and do this to me, Ben, it's hard. But I'm going to keep going and I'm going to get good people in that parliament beside me because it means so much to me to help the people that need help.
Wow. So pretty, really, basically a television meltdown. It was quite extraordinary to watch that vision. And when she talks about wanting to get good people around her, well, reports emerging that One Nation has approached Mark Latham, others. So interesting to see who they are trying to recruit. But what did you make of this drama? You watched it in real time in Canberra, this massive split again in One Nation, this party imploding.
Oh, well, it's not just One Nation. I mean, we've got other events as well, which we're going to touch on today. Michaela Cash, Greg Hunt, PK, I felt that we sort of almost could have kicked off the podcast today with the Days of Our Lives theme music.
My favourite show.
Just, it's been, you know, it's soap opera bordering on a circus. But let's go through these issues one by one. We've got the One Nation drama, but we've also got the Barnaby Joyce drama. He and his partner, Vicky Campion, their decision to accept $150,000 in payment for this tell-all interview with Channel 7's Sunday Night program. It appalled his colleagues and it's, you know, quite a few people uncomfortable with it around the nation. And it's about to get worse because that interview actually is going to air on Sunday. Let's have a listen to the promo.
You can't help but you fall in love with
it. I failed.
The Sunday Night exclusive, Nothing Off Limits.
Nothing off limits, including the suggestion. Including the suggestion that Vicky Campion was pressured to have an abortion. This is pretty bad for the government.
It's a car crash. It is absolutely extraordinary. So the government's been managing for an entire week now questions around this $150,000 payment. Of course, a lot of the pressure is on Barnaby Joyce himself, but it has blowback for the entire government, of course, because he is taking the payment. He's saying, you know, it's going to a trust fund for this baby and that therefore that's kind of justifiable that the interview is about. Ultimately, they wanted Vicky and the baby, not him. He, as a politician, will still front up for interviews for free. It's just that they wanted the whole package deal. But this has been very embarrassing for the government. You know, I think all of them have taken a pretty hard line on it. They still haven't gone as far as to say they should ban such payments, by the way. I mean, I think the argument, if you talk to them off the record too, is if we're going to have many other cases like this, it's unnecessary to do it. No one else would do this. But either way, I think it's a dangerous precedent, personally, that a politician take money for an interview, wouldn't you say? I mean, you don't really want to go there in Australian politics.
No, you don't. It's not a good look. I mean, these, let's be frank, MPs are paid very, very well. And, the perception image of taking cash for an interview is cash for comments, not a good one.
No, and this just makes this Barnaby Joyce story go on and on and on. They were meant to put it away. He's on the backbench now. You know, so far it looked like it was kind of settled. But they've relaunched it essentially as a story. This will air, like we're recording this on Friday morning. This will air Sunday night. This will run into the news cycle all of next week then.
It'll be back when he's back. He's taken leave for another 4 weeks, but he'll be back in August when Parliament resumes, which will be after the time that his leave runs out. So, yeah, this will just continue to roll on.
So that's number one. I say it's the trifecta effect for the government. Number two, Michaelia Cash. Now, Michaelia Cash has been under intense scrutiny and also intense media interest in her role for tipping off, well, her office's role in tipping off the media over the Australian Workers Union raids. It hasn't gone away, though, because she was subpoenaed this week to give evidence in an AWU bid to have the investigation into their GetUp donation thrown out. But she gave a really extraordinary press conference, didn't she, Sabra, where she, you know, she's clearly under intense pressure. The Senate has been putting pressure on her to come into estimates and answer questions, and she just fronted up, and it was, wow, it was worth watching that entire press conference, yeah. That's for sure.
Yeah, and the Snappers had a field day, didn't they? But she did front up to that press conference. Yes, she rarely does hold a press conference or does interviews these days, or she's very particular about the interviews that she does do. She tends to go to favourite journalists to do these things. But I think what's damaging here for Michaelia Cash is that she's become really a figure of ridicule, and it's pretty hard to get your reputation back when you become a figure of ridicule.
Yeah, and the other part of that was the Prime Minister under questions in Question Time saying, I've got full confidence in Michaelia Cash, which of course is always, I saw lots of tweets from political journalists saying
yeah,
it's not a good look when the PM has to say that.
And sometimes, often in the past, when someone issues their full confidence, you know that's not what they're giving. So, that is going to be one story that will continue to roll on to for the government.
Yeah, and she's in a key role. So what they effectively lose is a spear carrier, an arguer, somebody who fronts up and can make the case because she's
given
compromised.
Jobs, you know, that's the big theme of the government, jobs and growth. She's their jobs minister and she's not out there often talking about jobs.
And there's another job that was talked about a lot this week. Weird segue, but I went there. Greg Hunt, he's the third in the trifecta problems on the government side, Barnaby, Michaelia, and then Greg Hunt. The Herald Sun published a front page story. Now, of course, Greg Hunt is a Victorian MP too, so a bit of resonance for it to come from a Melbourne paper like that, about a bit of an outburst he had with a visiting mayor. He did it 7 months ago where the mayor was visiting and he used some pretty rude and abusive language. It was not the kind of language you expect from a cabinet minister from a visiting mayor talking about issues. He had to apologise, but it was, let's just be clear, 7 months after it happened and the complaint had come to his office. Could have complained and make the issue go away a long time ago, but he has now apologised.
I should have apologised earlier. My fault and my responsibility, and I accept that responsibility and repeat that apology to the mayor, sincerely and absolutely.
And the mayor of Katherine wasn't impressed. And then, of course, Labor used this revelation, because it was a big story and quite embarrassing for Greg Hunt on a personal level, but for the government, to ask many questions of whether this really showed a kind of pattern of behaviour. And there's now the revelation that he also had a bit of an uncomfortable conversation, sort of a full-on conversation, with the Secretary of the Health Department, Martin Bowles, who's no longer the Secretary, but that the Prime Minister had to intervene. I mean, that's extraordinary, isn't it?
Look, it is extraordinary, but it's also a bit of a strange tactic, wouldn't you think, PK? The Labor Party, in their most recent history, I can remember a Prime Minister who was fond of salty language.
Yes. Look, for anyone who doesn't get what we're actually referring to, we're talking about Kevin Rudd, who, of course, was very much, there were many reports of Kevin Rudd's salty language. I love the word salty. It makes it sound like, better than it is. So, yes, and of course, when Greg Hunt was questioned about this in Question Time this week by Labor, because they decided there's a weakness here and they were going for it, weren't they? Greg Hunt kind of hit back a bit, referring to Bill Shorten with the famous pie incident. Now, I've got to say that pie shop is my local shop, so I know the pie lady. I'm very across this pie story. It's when he came in and he had an altercation with the woman at the mixed business shop. That's what it really is. They sell more than pies. But the idea that they were trying to bring in here was, hang on a minute, you know, you're not clean here either. There have been others that have had outbursts. Well, I think that's true, but it's still a problem for Greg Hunt and the government, isn't it?
Well, look, From this point of view, it's a bad thing in that the government hasn't ended the week talking about positive things. And, you know, the public hates this sort of stuff. This is what really turns them off. And the fact that you've been talking about things that are pretty much a soap opera all week. So, you know, in those terms, PK, not a flash week for the government. But one thing it has been able to chalk up and it has gone in their favour is that the Catholic Church has decided to sign on for the National Redress Scheme for child sex abuse victims stemming from the Royal Commission. And that is they can chalk that one up as a success.
Yeah, I think so too. It's funny, isn't it? There's all this sort of drama that we've talked about that plays out, a lot of personality drama. But this is the big one. I mean, this is a very big deal. This actually matters to people. These are people who have been treated in the most hideous, unfair way and have been systematically ignored. Here we have the country rising up and saying that's no longer good enough, and the government really responding to that in a very real, tangible way. It's a process that was started, of course, by Julia Gillard, who launched this Royal Commission, but it's now being executed by the Turnbull government. And some rare bipartisanship here too, which you don't get very often. There was a moment, in fact, when Dan Tehan, the Minister for Social Services, explaining this, you know, did give credit to Julia Gillard for that Royal Commission when asked.
I've got no problems whatsoever in praising Julia Gillard for setting this this Royal Commission up. And likewise, it has been a very bipartisan approach across all state and territory governments in making sure that we've got this national redress scheme established.
Another big reform was unveiled this week too, Sabra, which was the shake-up of the family law system. And that is also significant. Of course, the jury's out about, you know, how that will all work out, but the abolition essentially of the family court is part of that as well. So two big reforms really announced by the government this week while all this drama is going on.
Yeah, it has been a big week. And PK, I understand that you've spent the entire party room budget securing our guest for this week.
Our guest used to be ours. He defected. He's back. I'm very excited to say this. He had defected from the ABC. We've brought him back in because Sabra and I, it's a sort of big plot, really. It's a big mission of ours to bring him back. Chris Yulman, political editor of Channel 9. Here we are.
Well, hi. Where did you get the ABC disco ball? What did that cost you? Is that coming out of my taxes?
We stole that.
Come up and send an
estimate, stole that,
you know,
from the Channel 9 offices, didn't you, Sabra? Just kind of grabbed it, didn't you?
Yeah, that used to be in Laurie Oakes' office, wasn't it, Chris?
It may well have been in Laurie Oakes' office.
We
as
all
was
know.
The golden boot when I arrived.
You and your fancy commercial largesse. Well, we've brought
whoa,
you in,
ho.
You fancy, fancy guy. We've been talking about it all, Chris. We've kind of, you've heard, we've kind of gone there. Government's had, a difficult week. One Nation's imploding. Let's just start with the One Nation bit, the One Nation imploding part, because it's quite a big deal and has a significant effect on the government too in terms of doing deals. What do you make? Is this basically the late 90s again, Chris?
Yeah, look, the thing about these parties is there's no ideological glue that holds them together. So given the entire thing is built around the personality of one person, that being Pauline Hanson, then there's nothing to hold people necessarily in her orbit. Now, we've seen that with a number of the minor parties. We're now seeing the fracturing, and don't forget it's fractured before this because we've already had one person walk out of One Nation. I'm finding it hard, actually, to keep up with who's who in the zoo in the Senate at the moment. But we also now learn that Pauline Hanson has been trailing her coat with Mark Latham, with Corey Bernardi, has on a wish list Bob Catter and Robbie Catter. So there's been conversations with at least two of those that I've confirmed so far, that being Mark Latham and Corey Bernardi. So I wonder how those of her who are already in her Senate team feel about the possibility that others might be at the top of the ticket next time round.
PK, this is pretty interesting, given that, Pauline's struggling. She struggled from the get-go to have control over her four senators. And remember, Rod Cullerton went. Malcolm Roberts is gone. So we've had Peter Giorgio, who was the chap that was standing with her yesterday as this news was breaking that Brian Burston was looking like splitting from One Nation. I sort of wondered whether her tears last night were because that she's lost her blocking vote of three. In the Senate, she could have used those numbers basically to block anything that the government's had, but now with Brian Burston going off and doing his own thing, she's lost that power.
She's absolutely looks like she's on the cusp of losing that power. But either way, she looks really like she's lost her grip on the party. And this is this is not new for Pauline Hanson. I mean, she kind of runs her party like a bit of a personality cult, and she's not afraid to tell them all that, you know, the reason people vote for us is because of her brand, Pauline Hanson. What did she tell us? No one even knows who Rudd Cullerton is in Australia. Now, you know, people might be surprised for me to hear this, but I actually agree with her. Like, these people are... No one does know who they are. I mean, this is actually true. It is a party built on her cult, on her personality, on her, and the fact that she's had such longevity in the Australian political consciousness. I mean, everyone knows this woman. She is a household name like nobody else in that parliament other than perhaps the Prime Minister, but even I reckon she rivals him sometimes.
That's right. She is a brand, and she is as close as Australia comes to having a Trump. And by that, I mean a personality cult that draws people to it and seems unaffected by the things. She can cry on national television and possibly draw the sympathy of her crowd. As long as she's the outsider looking in, as long as she's the persecuted person, even if it's by people in her own party, I think the rusted-on Pauline Hanson voters are probably hard to get rid of. The question you have to ask in the long run is, does she do any brand damage? And the question Labor's asking this morning is, hopefully, some before she hits Longman and passes her preferences to the coalition. So, you know, that's the question that's relevant at the moment. And, of course, all of this is done in the backdrop of that by-election.
Yeah, I think that's a really relevant point. Sabra, that's true, isn't it? Because this is coming all at the wrong time for her. Really bad timing.
And that's why, you know, people suspect that she made this policy announcement about not supporting the government's taxation corporate tax plan, because this will play out well for her in Longman.
The other element, of course, this week, I just want to touch on it with you, Chris, is a difficult week for the government, the Barnaby-Joyce saga, Michaela Cash, and then, of course, bit of heat on Greg Hunt. It hasn't been an easy one for the government. How do they kind of continue to manage this festering Barnaby-Joyce issue?
Look, that is just an absolute shocker. And there is nothing more than his colleagues want than that Barnaby-Joyce just shut up for a while, not just for the sake of the party, but for the sake of his family. Now, spare a thought for his wife, Natalie, and his daughters that will be put through the ringer again after this tell-all interview goes to air on Sunday night. And, you know, I think Wacker Williams is a really decent man, and he made a point this week. He thinks about young Seb when he Googles himself in 7 years' time, and all of these stories about his background come out. So, you know, Barnaby-Joyce should not be thinking first and foremost about his party, although that's a big consideration, and the government, which is a big consideration, but his family. And by that, I mean everybody in his family.
Oh, yeah. His wife and four daughters are the very definition, don't you think, of dignified silence.
Mm.
So far.
Let's not forget, while they were growing up, and there were huge difficulties inside that family, while they were growing up, she was keeping the family together.
It's incredible, but it's a sort of story, I think, which would resonate with a lot of women across the country who do that hard work all the time. Chris, there's another huge yarn that isn't just this week or last week. It's kind of, it's Australia at the moment, and that is the relationship with China, political interference, and some interesting comments that have been published this morning in the Australian newspaper by John Howard about wanting to get the Australia and China relationship back on track because, you know, it really has broken down a bit. You have been watching this forensically. You have, I think it's fair, don't you think, Sabra, to say that Chris is a little obsessed with this area, this sort of kind of general story. Where's this going?
Yeah, I am. Can I tell you why? Because we're at an inflection point. Never in our history has our major trading partner, our major ally, been a split between an authoritarian capitalism state and one that has the old democratic capitalist model. And we are at a point where Australia is actually probably going to have to make some kind of choice about this and make an accommodation. Those two things, by the way, those two ideologies are now actively at war around the world. China is trying to spread its model of government, and its model of government will not suit us. I think that is just a statement of fact. Now, let's look at the relationship. And what we keep being told, by the way, by every business person in this country, by a large chunk of the former diplomatic community and academic community, that Australia has somehow mishandled this. Now, let's look at what China's done. China has taken over and militarised the South China Sea. China is actively looking for a port in the Pacific. China is behaving terribly inside our borders, and we have actually presented plenty of proof for that. If we acted in the same way in China as the embassy here acts inside Australia's border, they would punt us. And apparently, when we complain, we're mishandling the relationship. Now, if this is the future of the relationship, it means that we can't say anything, that our correct position is as a tribune state before the imperial throne. And frankly, I don't like that arrangement. And yes, I have been barking about this for 3 years. This is the reality that we have to confront.
Bob Carr and Christina Keneally were sort of questioned. Their names were mentioned this week and questioned following the intervention by Andrew Hastie within Parliament. He's the chair of the Federal Government's Intelligence Committee, and he went about naming an Australian-Chinese citizen who had been named in an investigation in the United States, and people had claimed that he'd misused parliamentary privilege. And then this attention was brought on Bob Carr and Christina Keneally, that Bob Carr had written questions for Christina Keneally to ask in Parliament about John Garnaut, someone who used to be in the Prime Minister's office. He'd been carrying out an investigation on behalf of the Prime Minister. Christina Keneally said she was well within her rights to ask about what John Garnaut was doing, and she denied that she had help from Bob Carr. She said they were her own questions. What's Labor saying about this internally?
Well, the reason that Andrew Hastie acted was because he thought there was a roadblock. There are two bills that are going through his committee at the moment, the Intelligence Committee, and usually they come to a bipartisan position on this. Big fight inside that committee. They've been badly drafted, there's no doubt, those bills, and so the Labor Party's within its rights to say there's an issue here. Now, but there's an internal fight inside the Labor Party between different people, particularly Anthony Byrne and Mark Dreyfus, who are both on those committee about, and Anthony Byrne's very much in the Andrew Hastie camp. Interesting.
And he's the deputy chairman.
He's the deputy chair of the committee, and he was there when Hastie made his statement, and a lot of people missed that. So what Hastie was trying to do was to break what he saw as a logjam, because the government also has backed off. It's been frightened by the way that China's reacted. It's really backed off in the last 5 or 6 months or so. So Hastie believed that he had to act in order to get this bill through. Now, he's actually had some success because there are two bills, and one's the espionage bill, and that bill has now been ticked off by the major parties. The report will come out next Tuesday, and it will be a unanimous decision on that. So Hastie's intervention actually has had some action. And what the Liberal Party was prepared to do, and the Prime Minister had given Hastie permission, was that if yesterday the Labor Party hadn't agreed, they would have brought both bills back into the House.
Wow, things are getting quite to the pointy end, aren't they?
Yeah, so there's been movement on that front. But, you know, this is a sign of our times. These are the things that we have to, a reality that we have to come to terms with. And now, look, I want to put this in some sort of perspective. Obviously, we have to have a great relationship, the best relationship we can have with China. But look at the way it's proceeded so far. That when they were moving into the South China Sea, we barked and we didn't bite. The United States barked and it didn't bite. That game is over now. There will be a game in the South Pacific. We're barking at the moment. We certainly haven't bitten. Inside our borders, we are barking. If at some stage Australia does not stand up and actually tell China what it expects inside its own borders, the same thing China expects, non-interference. That's all that's being asked.
Sure, Chris, but there are ramifications to that, aren't there?
Sure.
I mean, there are genuinely, there is going to be economic business blowback. Do you think we should just wear it?
Yeah, and you know, I spoke to the editor of a Chinese language newspaper yesterday, and it's the last one that's not actually controlled by Beijing. This is part of the interference here, is that all of the Chinese language media in Australia is actually controlled by Beijing. And this editor said to me, do you know the way, she's a Chinese Australian, do you know what Chinese think of Australians? They're spineless. Now, she said, we might not like the Americans, but we don't think that they're spineless. That's the problem we've got. And the problem we've got this year is that the Chinese, look at what they've done. They've turned the heat up to one and Australia melted. Now,
yeah.
No one respects anyone who's weak, and that's what they think.
Last question to you, Chris. Is the Turnbull government getting the tone right? Because it's been, you know, you've listened to Trade Minister Steve Shobo, you listen to the Foreign Minister Julie Bishop, who's being criticised by, you know, sort of more pro-China analysts as being not getting it right on this. They're playing both sides of the street, aren't they?
There's a fractured sound coming out of the government at the moment. And look, this is the problem I think that faces both major parties. We don't have a China strategy. We really don't have a plan. They've got a plan, a long-term plan. And in fact, we know what all of their plans are. They've made them quite public. And those plans are going to intersect with ours, and some of them we're not going to like very much. We have to come to terms with China, but we have to do it in a position of strength. We have to say what our values and expectations are and defend them.
Chris, you have been an awesome guest. You know, come back.
I like
right?
this room.
Yeah, well,
this
room's what's bigger it been than like, actually? Tell us the inside story. Do you miss us?
Oh, look, honestly, you know, I miss you guys, yes. And that's the absolute truth, and I say that to everyone. What do I miss about the ABC? I miss my colleagues. I miss some of the best journalists I have ever met and am ever likely to meet work for the ABC. I think it is a national treasure and one that we should look after. I felt it was time for me to move on. I also think that Channel 9 has a great news tradition, and that's why I'm there. But, you know, by having moved on, someone noted on Twitter, I've improved the ABC. and I decided to take that as a compliment.
Oh, that's so good.
Because that's the kind of guy I am.
Oh, look, you know what? We still love you. And I think a good media is one that thrives and where lots of people everywhere are breaking stories, which you're doing. So, Chris, thanks so much for coming in.
Take care, guys.
All right. Okay, Sabra, it's time for trading preferences. What got you excited this week?
Oh, well, you know what kind of tickled my fancy is that when Pauline Hanson and Peter Georgiou held their media conference here at Parliament yesterday, they stood side by side in solidarity, insisting that the One Nation Party wasn't splitting. And this was, of course, in response to the word that Brian Burston had split off and was supporting the government over their corporate tax plan. And Pauline was very feisty in delivering that press conference. Really, really feisty, and she sort of stormed off. But the thing is that Peter Georgiou didn't realise that she'd stormed off once she said that the One Nation Party was united, and he continued to front the media by himself as some of the cameras sort of quickly followed Pauline Hanson off to the other side of the courtyard. And Senator Georgiou continued talking to the media until they pointed out, hey, do you realise that you're on your own? No, he didn't. He said, oh, well, you know, that's it. And he proceeded to end the media conference there and quickly dashed off after the party leader. I thought that was just a metaphor for what was happening within the party. And, you know, all the TV editors love stuff like that. So it made for good pictures for them.
The pictures are extraordinary. I actually, he's trying to stay loyal. He's her last one, and she's walked off on him.
Yeah.
Does she wonder, really?
Like a shag on a rock.
Totally like a shag on a rock. All right, my trading preference is, we referred to it already in the podcast. Remember, of course, Michaela Cash fronting up to the media in the blue room, which is where serious stuff happens, isn't it, Sabra? It's the press conferences that you know are serious
totally,
ones.
It's totally like serious.
Where the PM turns up and gives his press conferences. Well, Michaela Cash turns up too after the subpoena. And, of course, she reveals in this press conference that she's going to fight the subpoena and legally challenge the subpoena so she doesn't have to give evidence. But either way, she addresses the big elephant in the room. Remember the whiteboard, that whiteboard which went viral. The whiteboard is, you know, she kind of was walked behind the whiteboard into Senate estimates. She was smuggled behind a whiteboard. Now, at the time, it became kind of, again, a metaphor, this image of her, you know, running away from scrutiny. She's pretty cranky about the whole whiteboard thing because she says she had nothing to do with it. You know, they organised it. This is the parliamentary services. This had nothing to do with her. But the way she talked about the whiteboard was quite hilarious, didn't you think? The way that settle this whiteboard issue.
I had nothing to do with the whiteboard. Can I tell you, you think you were surprised? You should have seen the look on my face. I was the one who was surprised. I believe it's parliamentary security have taken full responsibility for what occurred.
And I noticed that cartoonists almost always now can't draw Michaela Cash without a whiteboard somewhere.
All right, that's it. We have reached the conclusion of the episode. Don't forget to tweet at us using the hashtag #ThePartyRoom. Sabra, thank you so much for being my co-host. You will be back again next week.
PK, you know what? I've enjoyed it so much. I will be back next week.
You can also email us anytime. Send us your thoughts, thepartyroom@abc.net.au. Do us a favour. Please, 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 please tell your friends about us. Rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. It helps other people find us.
And you know what? You can always hear more political analysis and interviews from both of us every weekday on RN Breakfast, ABC Local Radio and RN Drive.
You can. I listen to Sabra every single morning and I know it's time to get the kids ready. And they're like, Sabra's on the radio. It's true, Sabra. You are a household voice for us.
Oh, awesome.
See you next week.
Okay, see you, PK.